This is Craft Council from the Craft Council. Conversations with makers about their craft, their challenges, and the ideas that shape their future. For more information, find us via the Craft Council website, www.craftscouncil.org.uk, or on Instagram at Craft Council. You're listening to Craft Council from the Craft Council. I'm Lewis Dalton Gilbert.
I'm Anna Fielding.
And today we're delighted to speak with Emily Johnson, the creative director, co-founder and owner of 1882, a design-driven ceramics brand based in Stoke-on-Trent. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Em.
Hello.
Great to have you here. First off, I'd like you to describe where it is you work most often. What does it look like for everyone at home?
Oh, wow. We're really lucky because we are in the bottom front-facing area of the Wedgwood factory in Barlaston. And it's all windows and it's on a beautiful blue sky day. You couldn't be anywhere better. But we have 9,500 square feet. We've got 24 potters and there's a cacophony of noise. There's a cacophony of machines, but we're a very happy family and that's where we are.
Is 24 potters the whole staff or there are more people as well?
Well, we have a very small kind of admin team. So there's four of us on top of that. So, yeah.
Still under 30 then?
Still under 30, thank the Lord.
And how did you get into the ceramics business?
Well, I'm actually a fifth generation ceramics family. Wow.
So that makes you royalty around here, Emily.
Yeah, so, but my family business, which is Johnson Brothers, was bought by Wedgwood back in the 1960s. So there was actually no pressure for me to go into the family business because it was no longer a family business. I actually ended up forming the company with my father in 2011 with the sole purpose of it being, two purposes, design driven and looking after the heritage craft skills that are in Stoke-on-Trent and keeping them in Stoke-on-Trent. But he thought I was completely insane.
So what made you want to go back into that business since there was no pressure for you to do it?
I had gone to design school and was doing a master's in architectural interior design. And during the process, we had to look at a material in more detail. And I chose fine bone china and realised that I knew a lot more about it than I thought. But also believed, and I still do believe, that it was highly underutilised in terms of its design capabilities, you know, what you could actually do with this material. So came up with an idea of doing some lights. My dad said, impossible to be made, and 6 months later they were made. But during that process, I was working with Max Lamb and said, look, I'd like to start this company with the idea, this is the idea behind it. Would you be interested in possibly doing a collection? And he said, yeah, why not? Let's get involved. And honestly, it was rooted in a core, but it sort of just progressed naturally from there.
Yeah, I mean, you guys do lots of incredible collaborations, don't you? Could you speak a bit more about those and why you made that decision?
Collaborations, oh my gosh, the collaborations we've done over the years have been phenomenal. Obviously, there's Max Lamb, Beth Ann Laura Wood, Beth Ann Gray, Sir Paul Smith, John Pawson. I mean, the list goes on. Oh, and we can't forget Stoke-on-Trent's own Robbie Williams. So the thing is when you look at ceramics, and anyone who knows anything about ceramics would look at some of the projects we do and go, are you insane? For example, we just did a slip cast chair with Max Lamb. Now, no potter would touch that in a million years because they'd go, well, the material doesn't want to do this and this could go wrong and this could go wrong and this could go wrong. So what we found is if you work with people who've never worked with ceramics before, they don't come with a preconceived notion of the limitations of that material. So, yeah, that's why it's been a lot of fun. I'm not sure the potters would say that, but yeah.
Experience,
that's the one.
Something new as well.
Yeah.
Here's a more philosophical one. What does craft mean to you?
Now, I was thinking about this on the way here, and I've got to be careful how I say this because craft can be a dirty word. Dirty because it is, in many regards, so overutilized. and in many regards does a disservice to the skills that people have. And, you know, you've got a handcrafted crisp. I mean, seriously. So craft, when people talk about factory, there is a connotation to the word factory and there's a connotation to the word craft. And we are a factory. And many people would say, well, you've got 26 crafts people. And I think that we've got 26 potters, because potters to me defines what they are. They are craftspeople. They are artists. They are artisans. But craft is a tricky one for me, oddly. I'm not sure that answered the question.
I think it's quite interesting because, you know, you mentioned earlier as well that you were very keen on preserving these heritage skills. So does that play into what you're thinking about at all?
Oh gosh, you see, this is the thing. They are heritage craft skills.
Yeah.
So there's the word craft in, you know, this is my struggle with it. But I think people have a perception that craft is a studio potter sitting behind a wheel, where what we do isn't considered craft because we're doing it en masse. But then en masse implies mass production, and we do batch production, limited edition and individual pieces. So like I said, it really is a complex one for me. But yes, we are all about heritage craft skills, because we need to preserve those heritage craft skills. But that always sounds like I'm talking about the past. You know, we are looking at the future, and the future is in those skills of the potters who are crafty.
This may sound like a super obvious thing to ask you, but why is it important to preserve those skills, and what role do they have in the future?
I believe that, especially in the world that we live in now, that humans and the ability to make is possibly one of the most important things that we can do. And I'm going to sound so pretentious, there is a dialogue that happens between people when they make things. There is a lot of heart, because I don't believe that you can make anything without heart. And so it is essential, because it is a community, it is a conversation, it is a dialogue that is absolutely essential for us humans.
And speaking about that community, you've already listed some of your amazing collaborators, but I just wondered, what makers and artists do you admire?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Big question.
That is a huge question. I mentioned him before we started recording this, John Booth. We are doing a collection with John Booth at the moment. He is phenomenal. There is, oh my gosh, on the spot, the list can go on and on and on. But yeah.
Do you have any dream collaborators?
Yes. Funnily enough, there are a few. I'd love to work with Acne, because I think them what they're doing fashion-wise is fantastic. I'd love to work with Rick Owens, because why not? But yeah, those are a few of the... I think it would be interesting to work with some fashion brands at this point.
Nice. Well, we've put it out there now.
Yeah, it's out into the universe. Yes, exactly.
Now, obviously, you're not in the clay yourself, but take this as you want. What tool could you not live without?
That is really easy, actually. Mm-hmm. It's called the really useful tool. So in our process, the beginning of it starts with modelling. And we're really lucky to have someone called Andy Henschel work with us in the factory. And Andy has 48 years of experience of modelling. And he has something called the really useful tool.
Is that its real name?
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Okay. So the really useful tool was handed down to him when he was an apprentice by someone who was retiring. Now, if you think that Andy has had it for 48 years, the person before him possibly had it, say, 48 years, but the really useful tool was handed down to him by someone else. So this tool has been, it's obviously over 100 years old. How old, we don't know. But I'm telling you, that really useful tool, because I think that not only is it a really useful tool, but it just encapsulates everything that we're about. So yeah, easy, really useful tool.
What does the really useful tool, what is it used for?
Oh my gosh, it is one of those things, blending, sculpting, cutting. Oh, it's just, yeah, it's beautiful. And it's about 15 centimetres long. Really a beautiful, worn metal. Oh, stunning. Really lovely.
So we're going to need visuals of that.
Yes, I can definitely
send
get
us some pictures.
Yeah, I will do indeed.
Well, there might be some things that the really useful tool can't help with. So could you tell us a bit about the obstacles that you're currently facing?
The biggest obstacle we have is that our workforce is aging. So the average age on our factory is 55. And what are we going to do when these skills retire? So excitingly, spearheaded by the production director at Emma Bridgewater, a guy called James, last year, two factories went into liquidation. And he went, guys, we've got problems here. And set up or spearheaded an apprenticeship scheme. So very excitingly, our first apprentice, we have three trainees already, but we now have an official industry apprentice scheme, which is a lovely collaboration between Emma Bridgewater, us, Susan Rose Ceramics, Phoenix Tiles. So it's really great that there's this collaborative effort going on. However, those apprentices are paid for from the factories. There's no support. There's no government support. Now, there is £1 billion worth of money sitting that isn't being spent, which the government has allowed for apprenticeship schemes. But the problem is getting the rigour of getting what you need is pretty much impossible to get that pool of money. So it is a challenge, but we have to do something because we are coming up to a cliff edge. Mm. And I talk about one woman who works with us called Helen. And Helen is beyond talented. Everyone in our factory is beyond talented, but she can hand build, flower make. She can do underglaze, inglaze, onglaze decoration. She can do lithography. She can do banding. She can do gilding. She can do slip lining, colour swilling. I mean, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. Now, that is just, she is more than one person. But unless we get someone training with her now, She will want to retire at some point. I mean, I say that as part of the contract that no one's allowed to retire. But, you know, it is a serious issue that faces us. You know, once these skills have gone, this was the argument I always had with my dad, and he was just like, it gets passed down in the mother's milk, which made me want to clock him one, because it's not something that you can learn in college. It is passed down, and I'm going to sound pretentious again, but it is passed down from soul to soul. It really, really is. So it has to be a long learning process.
If there are any aspiring potters listening, how can they apply to be a part of this apprenticeship?
You can email hello@1882limited.com.
How would you describe the overall situation in the potteries at the moment?
Again, you ask me on a bad day, you can be very cup half full or cup half empty. And I tend, as anyone who knows me knows, very cup half full. But I'm not going to lie, it's tough. We've had three factories go into liquidation this year alone, two last year, because of various reasons. It's purported that it's energy. Energy it only is 6% of our overhead. So yes, energy does factor in, and it would be nice if we got a subsidy, which we don't. We're the only one in the government's industry package that isn't getting a subsidy. Don't ask me why. But we have an enormous opportunity. At 1882, we work with some of the world's greatest brands. We work with Burberry, Mulberry, Jo Malone London, Estee Lauder, Le Labo. The list goes on and on and on. Now, these amazing companies have the opportunity to go to China and the Far East in order to get their ceramics made, but they are getting them made here, which means that there is an appetite and there is an opportunity, and we can be competitive. So I think that there is a lot of opportunity. I think people are very aware of provenance now. They are very aware of human skill and they want to preserve that human skill. So I think that's really encouraging. But we just need to make it more of a sunshine industry. So rather than talking in all the newspapers about energy and another liquidating factory, there's a lot of small factories left in Stoke-on-Trent who are doing phenomenal things. And if we all come together, we've got a fighting chance that we can continue on.
Emily, what craft would you love to master if you could?
Ceramics.
I can see how that would come in handy.
Have you dabbled?
Oh, I've dabbled. We once did a demonstration of tube lining at Liberty when we launched a collection with Beth and Laura Wood. And the guy said, stop, you're embarrassing yourself. But truly, I think ceramics, anyone who works in it will say that you don't stop learning. You never stop learning. So I would love to master that. Thank you very much.
Is there something you see someone you work with do regularly that you are so impressed by?
Every time I take people around the factory and we do a tour of all the departments, all shop floors, as we like to call it, I always say, now this is the most important area. This is where the magic happens. And everyone takes the mick. But to be honest, every single person on that factory is so amazingly skilled at what they do. And I look at what they do and they make it effortless and they make it look like, it's just to me, the talent is incredible, incredible.
Okay, blue sky thinking, and it doesn't have to be in ceramics, but dream case scenario. If time, money and physics were no object, what would you love to make?
Easy, a ceramic house.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Why haven't you done that?
Well, it's not a house per se, but we have been collaborating with the incredible is a word I use too much, incredible Shona Heath, who is the Oscar-winning set designer from Poor Things. And all I can say is there's a work in progress which involves dragon's tails, popcorn, toast, all made of ceramic with some fishes and some sconces. I mean, it's going to be magic.
When can we find out more?
Well, it's a work in progress. I think that we're going to start properly working on it. Well, we are already starting properly working on it. So hopefully we'll be able to have the great unveil in about a year's time.
How exciting.
I'm fascinated. You have to keep us in the loop on that one.
Absolutely.
And one final thing, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's in the same field as you or coming up in the field? Or conversely, what's the best advice you've been given?
One piece of advice that I was given that I think is a catch-all for everything is always retain your sense of humour, especially when you're working in an environment like clay. It's unforgiving. She's hard. She's unkind. So being able to keep that sense of humour is important. I think hard work is often overlooked. And it is, as we all know, a lot of hard work. But in terms of the business side of things, the piece of advice I was given by the head of manufacturing at Wedgwood about 20 years ago, no, it can't be 16 years ago when we first started, was logistics. And he said, it doesn't matter about the design, doesn't matter about the making. If you get your logistics wrong or you get it right, it will be the making or breaking of you. And I have to say, it is one of the most boring pieces of advice I have ever been given and is absolutely bang on the money.
And how much effort have you now put into your logistics?
Oh, gosh, so much, so much. Yeah, but Brexit hasn't helped matters, but let's not go down that alley. Let's end on a positive note.
Would you live in a ceramic house?
As long as there was underfloor heating, yes.
And on that note, Emily, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much indeed. I love the opportunity of being able to talk about our wonderful world. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to Crafts Council from Crafts Council. Be sure to join us next time, where we'll be speaking to glassblower Chris Day and exploring more stories from the world of craft. Until next time.